Law self-defense content you are about to enjoy is presented for general educational purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice. If you are in need of legal advice, consult competent legal counsel in the relevant jurisdiction. Hey folks, welcome to our ongoing coverage of the Minnesota murder trial of Derek Chauvin over the in-custody death of George Floyd. I am attorney Andrew Branker for Law Self-Defense. It seems likely that today we will see an important inflection point in this trial, with the state resting its case in chief, intended to meet the state's burden to prove defendant Chauvin guilty as charged beyond a reasonable doubt, and the defense beginning the start of its case in chief, intended to raise a reasonable doubt in the jurors' minds with respect to the criminal charges. Interestingly, the defense case in chief is expected to be much briefer, only about 3 days, than was that of the state, which is now still entering its 12th day of testimony. Once the defense has also rested its case in chief, it will be time for the jury to receive its instructions on the law from Judge Cahill before they go into deliberations and are tasked with arriving at a unanimous verdict of either guilty or not guilty for Chauvin on each of the criminal charges brought against him, and perhaps lesser included charges as well. That sets aside, of course, the not unlikely prospect of a mistrial where we have no unanimous verdict on either guilty or not guilty for some or all of the criminal charges. Judge Cahill has indicated that he's likely to allow closing arguments to take place on this coming Monday, with the jury instruction and deliberations to follow immediately afterwards, at which point the jury will be sequestered in deliberations. Now, Minnesota, like almost all states, has developed a set of standardized jury instructions, and for its criminal courts, refers to these as the Criminal Jury Instruction Guide, or CRIMJIG. Within the CRIMJIG, the individual instructions are organized in much the same manner as Minnesota criminal statutes, and each CRIMJIG jury instruction is assigned a distinct identifying number. As we rapidly approach the point of the jury being instructed, I thought it might be helpful to share with all of you the relevant CRIMJIG instructions on the criminal charges in this case. Note that there are also separate additional instructions beyond those related to the criminal charges that the jury will also receive, usually more of a administrative sort of jury instruction, defining reasonable doubt, for example, but I'm going to focus strictly on the criminal jury instructions, those related to the criminal statutes in question here. I should note, however, that the standardized CRIMJIG instructions are not likely to be the final form of instructions received by the jury. The standardized instructions are best thought of as the starting point for the final instructions to be used by the jury in deliberations. There's always at least some modest and contextual modification made to any standardized jury instructions, things like filling in the defendant's name or the date of the event in question and so forth. The parties are free, however, to also suggest more substantive changes to the standardized jury instructions, to argue for their suggested changes before the judge. The reason for allowing such substantive changes is to customize the standardized instructions to best fit the unique factual and legal characteristics of any particular trial. Indeed, the parties in this trial have already done so in motions filed with the court, and I've embedded those motions below, and we should expect final arguments on the jury instructions as soon as the parties have rested and before the jury is instructed. All of these arguments about jury instructions, of course, take place outside the hearing of the jury. Ultimately, the trial judge, here Judge Peter Cahill, will decide the final form of the jury instructions, either accepting or rejecting suggested modifications by the prosecution and defense. Just as the jury is the finder of fact in a trial, Judge Cahill is the finder of law, and the jury is legally bound to apply the law in this case as they are instructed by Cahill. Of course, practically binding them to this obligation is all but impossible, but that's what's supposed to happen. As Judge Cahill makes those decisions on suggested modifications, he will also be well aware that standardized jury instructions exist for a reason. Those are the jury instructions preferred by the appellate courts who will be reviewing this or any other trial. And the more substantive modification Cahill adopts or allows, the more likely this case and his legal decisions in it are to be reversed on appeal. This awareness tends to act as a powerful brake on any judge's interest in greatly modifying the standardized jury instructions. Now, you'll recall that the criminal charges in this case are Statute 609-19, murder in the second degree, 609-223, assault in the third degree, 609-205, manslaughter in the second degree, and 609-195, murder in the third degree. All of those are linked in the text version of today's content. Just in a summary fashion, a more substantive discussion of those criminal charges can be found in another blog post that I did previously in the trial, also linked in today's content. And there's additional discussion, particularly on the recently modified third-degree murder law of Minnesota, discussed in yet another blog post that's also linked in today's content. The standardized jury instructions are 7 or 8 in number. I won't verbalize them all here, but again, you'll find them all hyperlinked to their full text form, their official form, in the text version of today's content. And again, I've also included the defense and prosecution motions on jury instructions. These were filed quite some time ago on February 8th, 2021. These will be already slightly different from the standardized crimjig instructions, modified in whatever way the parties think will be more favorable to them and also hopefully will be acceptable to Judge Cahill. It's likely further modifications will be argued for and against this week beyond those contained in these February motions. Helpfully, in the defense motion, it includes references to the relevant crimjig numbers, identifiers. Unhelpfully, the state motion does not. But in any case, those are both embedded in the text version of today's content. Finally, be sure to stay with us on this blog post all day as we live stream and live blog the trial proceedings in real time. And don't forget to join us again this evening for our end of day wrap up commentary and analysis. By the way, anyone interested in a free podcast version of our daily legal commentary and analysis of the Chauvin trial can access the Law of Self-Defense News and Q&A podcast, available on most every podcast platform, including Pandora, iHeart, Spotify, Apple, Google, or you can just get a simple RSS feed for your favorite podcast player. You can get all those links and more at lawofselfdefense.com/free podcast. And thanks, as always, to both Legal Insurrection and CCW Safe for the support that makes my coverage of this case possible. All right, folks, until next time, I'm attorney Andrew Branker for Law of Self-Defense. Stay safe.